You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 426 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, and as you probably listened to the last podcast, you would know that we're actually just still rolling. This is Robbie Callen with me. Hello, Robbie.
Heyo.
We just talked about the Eastern Conference over-unders for an hour or so, and now we're back for Western Conference. So if you missed that, please go back and listen to part one. That will explain all of our processes and all that stuff, and it should have been out in the last 24 hours. So go back and listen to that. I would definitely advise it. But for now, this podcast will be geared toward the Western Conference over-unders, and let's just dive right in, shall we?
Let's do it.
The first one is the Oklahoma City Thunder, led by old friend Dennis Schroeder. Not really led, but he's on the roster. 50.5 wins for the Oklahoma City Thunder. RPM over there at ESPN says 47 wins for OKC. As we alluded to on the Eastern Conference podcast, the Thunder's projection actually went down when they added Dennis Schroeder, so they're not seeing Dennis as a favorable asset. I kind of agree with that, to be honest with you. But where are you at on the Thunder? This is kind of a weird spot in a lot of ways because you're integrating a new piece. You're also subtracting Carmelo, and you had a bunch of injury stuff last year as well.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those stayaways. I think if you're projecting health for their top guys, so if you're talking about if Roberson's healthy for a full season, and then as are George, Westbrook, and Adams, I think this is an over. However, they are one of these teams that really the one guy that they can get away with being out for a little bit is Paul George. Because I think then you just revert back to 2 years ago. And like, okay, we know how to do this. We know how to win 47 games or whatever. Like, if Paul George goes out, that's very detrimental if you take the over in this. But as far as, like, the team recalibrating itself and saying, okay, like, this is how we go forward. Without George, they just kind of go, okay, like, we do our thing. Russ runs the show. Without Roberson, defensively, we already saw the impact of that. Without Adams, it's a similar thing defensively because all of a sudden your rim protection is non-existent. Without Russ, you're the Pacers with Paul George. So you're a 44-45 win team.
Yeah.
So if you're projecting health, I think you can target yourself into the over. But really any of those guys, any of those big four going down, and I think you're looking at a 46-47 win team. I do think, you know, they add Dennis, but it's easier to integrate Dennis in, even with all of his Dennis-ness as an alpha and thinking that he should be really good. It's easier to integrate him in than it is to integrate Carmelo Anthony. Because I think even Dennis understands going there, like, he's coming off the bench. Like, there's not a question. Like, there's not, oh, he could be our starting, you know, Melo is like, okay, I guess he's our starting four. Like, I guess. And Melo was like, I'm not coming off the bench.
Yeah, he must say he meant it very clearly he wasn't coming off the bench.
But. Right. And so, and they had to kind of like get him to agree to the trade. So they had to tell him, like, you're not coming off the bench. Like, that was probably heavily in conversation when they were discussing it. So, yes, there will be some growing pains with Dennis. Yes, Dennis was very bad last year. I do think, and this is something I wrote about on Dime, I do think Dennis will be better for the Thunder, frustratingly for Hawks fans, because he's going to be surrounded by a very good defensive team, and I think that's going to bring his effort and intensity level up on that end of the floor, which is the end of the floor that he should be able to have a positive impact on the game. Offensively, you just hope, if you're OKC, that he is able to take more spot up threes. His shooting bounces back some, because I mean it was awful last year, but so much of that was like he had to create it. I think something like only it's either 53 or 60. I think it might be 63. Like 63% of his threes were spot-ups, which was like the lowest by a lot in his career. I think the next lowest is like 74%. So like he was taking a lot of off-the-dribble threes, which is not good, especially for a guy with a shot as kind of funky as his. Spot-up, he's always been, since his rookie year, he's always been okay. He's never going to be really good, but he can be okay. And if he can be that for the Thunder, then he might not be a super, super big negative offensively. I still think Raymond Felton's probably a better fit for them as a backup point guard, except for on the defensive end, I do think if Dennis can bring that intensity and he can pick that energy level up, he can be okay. Yeah, all that is to say, don't bet this.
No, I mean, they clearly value Dennis and are seeing a role for him that I'm not necessarily seeing. At the same time, you know, 50.5 is interesting because they won 48 a year ago. They should be better than that on paper. This is a team that has more talent than that, in my opinion.
Yep.
But they also didn't add all that much. You know, they added Dennis is their big piece of acquisition. They had Nerlens Noel, who I have no idea. I mean, nobody knows what you're going to get from Nerlens Noel. Everybody else that's returning was already on the team, and it's injury stuff, as you note. So this is a full-blown stay away from me. I probably would lean under just by default. That's my default lean always.
Yep.
But I don't love anything about this. I think this is my 51 team, and the number's 50.5. So mm-hmm. There you go on that. And, of course, you know, Dennis, I hope everything goes well for Dennis in Oklahoma City just because it will definitely inspire some takes if he plays well. That's for sure.
Yes, it will.
All right, Utah Jazz are second in that particular division of the Northwest. RPM loves the Jazz, 53.5.
Shocker.
Actually projects them to win the division pretty comfortably, but the over-under is 48.5 over at Westgate Las Vegas. So where are you at here? Utah won 48 last year, so they're basically projecting the exact same thing from the Jazz. That's a weird one in some ways, but it also makes sense in some ways. So where are you at with them?
I think it's another stay away. Everybody wants to think that Donovan Mitchell is going to take a step next year and be even better than he was, and I'm not so sure about that. I am always skeptical of the rookie that comes out and blows everybody away, being able to follow it up with something better. If he plateaus, that's a huge win for the Jazz. Obviously, if Gobert stays healthy, that would be huge for them.
Yeah, they had some injury stuff last year. You know, Rudy played 56 games.
Yeah.
And then the rest, I mean, they had some health with, you know, Diamond, Joe Ingles, Ricky Rubio, and Derek Favors. But everybody else on this roster got banged up last year.
You know? Yeah, they did. And look, I don't know. Like, I think they are to me a better version of Indiana in the East, which we talked about as like that a regression sense. Candidate.
Yeah.
In terms of they just got the absolute most out of everybody. They got probably the best Ricky Rubio season we've ever seen. Great Joe Ingles season, your boy. They got a better season out of Donovan Mitchell than anybody could have dreamed when they got him at 13.
Royce O'Neal was like Royce legitimately O'Neal useful last year.
Good. They got that good Derek Favors season when he was healthy. He was huge for them when Gobert went down.
Jay Crowder then, was reasonably helpful when he arrived.
Like, yeah, I mean, they got – and, like, that's a testament to Quinn Snyder. That's a testament to that coaching staff. And it's not to say they can't replicate it, but I am a natural skeptic about these things. And year to year, this is something that Matt Moore and I talked about on the Dime Pod. It's so bizarre – how even teams that keep the same guys, that so many things can just go a little differently, whether it's in the personal life, whether it's relationships in the locker room that change a little bit, whether it's, you know, there's so many things that can just change that can take a team that was, you know, one of the most cohesive groups in the league and just kind of throw a little wrench in things, whether it's an injury, whether it's just some things change, whether it's teams aren't surprised by them, whether it's the rest of the West got a little better. Like, there are so many things that can go. This is just a stay away. I think this is about the same team as last year at 47, 48, maybe 49 wins. So I would probably lean under. But I just think it's a stay away. Like, I mean, things could go right for them if they stay completely healthy, but no one's ever healthy in the NBA for a full season. So, like, you have to assume something is going to happen. And I don't know. Like, I like this team a lot. They're a fun team. They're more fun than people give them credit for because they're Utah. But I think this is about right. You know, I mean, the rest of the West got a little better around them, and that can take away a win or two here or there. And I mean, they're a tough team to pin down. And I just think it's a stay away. I think it's a good number.
Yeah, it's a good number. I would gently lean over probably. I think, you know, for everything you said, I actually agree with pretty much everything that you said there. I do think with some more injury luck than they had, it could be over. And I do think, you know, having a full season of Crowder, having a, you know, a semi-full season of Dante Exum is helpful, and Rudy playing a little bit more, hopefully, as well. But I've always been a Utah Jazz optimist, so that's probably explains why I'm a little bit higher on them. But at the same time, I would not be telling people to go bet this. It's a pretty good number, I think. By the way, shout out to Tyler Cavanaugh, who is now a two-way guy with the Utah Jazz. Former Hawks legend.
Yes.
All right, Denver Nuggets. 47.5 wins for Denver. Season after they won 46 games and then, of course, fell one game short in that game 82 against Minnesota of the playoffs. RPM loves them as well. 50.5 wins.
Shocker.
you know, a team that has a lot of depth. Like, Denver is always a RPM favorite, to be sure. It was the same way back in the day when they were good with the Iguodala team and all that fun stuff a long time ago. For me, the big thing here, aside from just obvious improvement from young guys, is Paul Millsap. Millsap played 38 games last year. I think if Paul Millsap plays more than that and plays a full season, I probably lean over. But at the same time, if Paul's a little bit older these days, I don't think you're going to project him to play 38 games, but I'm not sure that he's the guy that he was last year. By the way, they were 22-16 with him in the lineup last season, so just file that away as well. But, I mean, it's a weird spot. Denver is kind of the same thing that they were a year ago. I mean, they paid a lot of guys, which is always interesting to monitor, you know, contract stuff. Their big lottery pick addition, Michael Porter Jr., probably isn't going to play this season.
Right.
He's not going to play very much. And the only other real addition from outside that could matter is Isaiah Thomas as the backup point guard. So, weird spot.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Isaiah Thomas signing is sneakily a pretty good move. I think losing Wilson Chandler is maybe a little bigger than people realize.
That's fair. They don't really have a natural small forward defender on the team right now.
Right. I mean, the funny thing about Denver, I've talked about this to people, is they don't have a three.
No, I mean, they're playing to start Will Barton, who's not a three. He's just not.
They have. Yeah, I was just at a thing with Will like last week, and he's not a three.
6'5".
Like, yeah, he's a shooting guard, but they're gonna play him. They're gonna play Jamal Murray. He'll float over there sometimes. Like, Gary Harris sometimes is there. Like, they have a bunch of guards, and then they have a bunch of fours and fives, and they just don't have threes. And you drafted Michael Porter to hopefully fill that 3-4 role, depending on what he can do athletically. That's a question mark for me defensively, but we'll get there when we get there. But yeah, I mean, like, it's a weird team. Everybody loves Jokic. We all know that. He's very good at basketball on the offensive end. He's very bad on the defensive end. That's a bigger thing than I think people realize. Having Paul Millsap play more would help that tremendously, because Paul is a very, if nothing else, very present defender. He is always in the right spot. He will help out a young guy like Jokic, who continues to struggle on that end, to the point that he could not play in that decisive game for the postseason on the defensive end late in the game. They're subbing him out. Offense, defense, switch with your best player. Not ideal. Zach Harper loves to remind everybody of that. No one is more against the Jokic contract
than Zach, yeah.
Than Zach Harper.
I've heard him talk about that multiple times, and I kind of understand where he's coming from.
No, I don't hate it. I'm with you. I mean, this is a team that could absolutely go over. It's a weird squad. Interesting squad. I think I might lean over with health. I like a lot of the pieces. I think people don't realize quite how good, like, Jamal Murray's really, really good. Like, really good. Gary Harris is very good. This is just a really good, solid, like, deep basketball team in a Western Conference that's as solid and deep as it is. That's going to be really important to having sustained success. I think part of their problem last year is point guard play off the bench. I think adding Isaiah Thomas is an upgrade. The question is on the wing. Can they defend well enough on the wing to get it done in a Western Conference that has some very, very talented wings? They struggled in that final game against Towns down low and Butler on the wing. That was kind of their Achilles heel in that game. And yeah, so I think this number's pretty close to right. I think they're going to be fighting with the Jazz for that same little area of the middle of the playoff race.
Yeah, I like Utah more than Denver fairly comfortably. I do think there's a scenario where Denver goes over, but the small forward thing is real. And Will Barton was very good last year, but Will Barton I don't think is as good as he was last year, if that makes sense, like as a projection moving forward. They're going to need the next step from Jamal Murray, which might happen. But I think even for all of the faults of Wilson Chandler, he helped them in a lot of ways. Yeah, it's a really tough one. I love Paul Millsap, so I definitely don't want to underestimate his impact that he could possibly make. But at the same time, I think it's sort of mitigated with the losses. So I would lean a little bit under, but that's like 47 versus 47.5, you know? It's like I would not wager on that, to be sure.
Yeah. I think I saw something historically. I think 10 out of the last 13 years, Denver's gone over.
Yeah, though, they always seem to be a little bit better than you would think.
Well, they're one of those teams. They're kind of like Memphis, where they don't get a lot of action, so no. The number tends to be a little more true.
Yeah, I think it's
maybe
a good number.
A little lower, a little softer. But this year, I think they got it right. I think it's the right number. I would maybe lean over, but again, like, I'm not gonna fight anybody that says under, because yeah, that wing situation is real.
Yeah, that's a spot where I would worry considerably at small forward. Okay, let's go to Minnesota. Minnesota is next on the agenda. This is a very interesting one. I had an eyebrow raise when I saw this because it's only 44.5. And they won 47 a year ago. That really surprised me number-wise just because, you know, they didn't really lose all that much. They add Anthony Tolliver, who, as we talked about on the Eastern Conference podcast, was pretty darn good last year. I mean, what does this team actually lose? Like, you're looking at this roster – they lose Jamal Crawford.
Here's the thing about this number. This number is building in the opportunity for this team to go full Wizards.
And they might, but I mean, even with last year, they won 47 last year with Butler missing 23 games, and they were awful without him.
Yeah,
like they were on pace for like 55 wins.
I think this is a pretty solid over.
Yeah,
however, this is baking in Fibs getting fired and Jimmy Butler requesting a trade.
Which both could possibly happen. They do, and
Here's the thing. If one, then other. That's
yeah, okay. and they lose Bielitsa, which matters, but I think Tolliver is just as good, frankly.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, this is probably my favorite over, I think, on the entire board. But I have to acknowledge there is some risk there. It's not like I would not be surprised if things went right. But if this team stays together all season long, they're better than 44.5 wins.
Yeah, I mean, that's for sure. I think your question mark is, like, does Jimmy Butler push his way out because that relationship with Towns is not good? Fibs is pretty squarely on the hot seat, which is kind of funny. But
it probably should be. I mean, it's...
He has not done an especially great job outside of the Butler trade.
I'm looking at this right now, by the way. It makes me laugh all over again. Wiggins, Towns, and Taj Gibson all played all 82 games last year.
Yeah.
And Tyus Jones, 82 games as well.
Yeah, they had some... outside of Butler, they had great health. I'm with you, though. Like, I mean, they were really... I mean, defensively without Butler, they were atrocious.
Well, they don't have anybody else they can guard on the wing. I mean, their only wing defender is Butler. I guess they add
Tolliver,
but yeah, he's still more of a four defensively. Yeah. Like, they have a couple of rookies in Josh Okogie and Kenny Bates Diop, who could theoretically defend if they just said, "All right, guy, you're a rookie, go defend." Like, in the way that Torian Prince was used 2 years ago on a playoff team where he was just like, all right, Torrey, we don't care about your offense. Go play defense. Maybe that works. But, you know, this is not a team with any depth. You know, fortunately, Tibbs doesn't really use depth, but they really only have they have eight. They really only have eight guys. It's the starting five plus Tolliver, Tyus Jones, and Gorgui Jang, and that's kind of it.
Yeah, which means you're one big piece going down away from disaster. But again, that's kind of everybody. So when it's hard to factor that.
I think it's worse than Minnesota, but yeah, it's a good point.
Yeah,
it's kind of everybody.
It's kind of hard to factor. I mean, we talked about that with pretty much everybody so far. But yes, I mean, I think over is the correct play. I didn't give it out, but the more I think about it, that number is fairly soft, but there is risk with this team. Just again, like, this is the Wizards of the West in terms of locker rooms, and having the potential for it to implode on itself despite talent. That said, they are so talented, as long as everybody's on the floor, they still should win 46.
Yeah, so. I totally agree with all of that. And by the way, offshore still 44.5, so it's not like it's immediately rising, which I'm surprised by. Maybe we're just wrong, but I'm going to go over. I like that play.
Yeah.
All right, the Blazers are the last team in this division. What a
division, by the way.
Yeah, but I'd say all five teams projected to be winning records in the Northwest, which is kind of crazy. 41.5 for the Blazers. Candidly, I know they were the 3 seed last year. I think they're the worst team in this division, but at the same time, the number is so low that I was like planning to bet the under on the Blazers this year, and the number is a lot lower than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I gave out the over on this.
I think it feels like an over because the number, I mean, I was expecting the number to be like 46, and right. It's 41.5.
Yeah, 41.5 is low. I mean, look, this is a team, we talk about cohesiveness. For better or worse, they have it, despite the protests of Portland fans. And look, to the dismay of Hawks fans, Terry Stotts is a really good coach.
He is. He's a plus coach. And
he is very good. That he gets a lot out of these guys. I mean, look, like, they have some albatrosses on the cap sheet.
To be sure.
But, like, the thing is, they still have a very solid, like, just regular season team. Like, I think their issue is very Boston-y 2 years ago, where they just don't have a gear to grab. They are who they are. And when they run up against somebody who can grab that gear, a.k.a. Anthony Davis, who's going to go out and average, like, 40 and 15 against you. Also, that was just a god-awful matchup.
It was. I mean, Portland loses three guys in the rotation, but they were all, like, fringy guys. You know, Shabazz Napier, Ed Davis, Pat Connaughton are the guys they lose, and they're replacing them with a couple of rookies, and Avery Simons, Gary Trent. They have Nick Stauskas, and they have Seth Curry. Like, that's
losing downgrade. Ed Davis is bigger
than
people think, because he was really good last year. Defensively, he's about all they got as far as rim protection, because Nurkic is not good.
And, you know, they're banking on Zach Collins, who was their lottery pick from last year, who I always kind of like, but doesn't look like he's going to be a big thing
in the NBA level.
So, I think they are worse this year than last year. But again, they won 49 games last year. That's a big drop.
Yeah, I don't think they're 8 games worse. I think they're a 43 win team, and that wouldn't make the playoffs.
No, it wouldn't. And I think I'm picking them to miss the playoffs, but also be over, which is crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the spot we're in the West. I'm with you. Over in the 9 seed.
I mean, you had 9 teams last year with 46 or more wins, and now you add the Lakers. So that's 10. I mean, don't think anybody else is going to make the leap, whether it be Dallas or whoever else, you got 10 for sure. And like 10 playoff teams for 8 spots.
Yep.
And I think Portland's probably one of my least favorite of that. But still, you know, 41.5 is just too low. So I would lean over. I'm not sure I'm as hot on it as you are, but that number was a lot lower than I thought it was going to be. So I will go over.
Winners.
That. The Warriors are the Warriors at 62.5. RPM doesn't really matter. It's the Warriors. So how hard are they going to try, Robbie? That's the only question that matters.
I mean, I would lean under, but I wouldn't bet against them. They had the weird health stuff last year with both Steph and KD missing time. I figure both of them will probably play about 60 games. I think the first sign of any ankle tweak was Steph. He gets shut down for 3 weeks. KD, the first time his knee is sore, he's done for 2 weeks. I mean, like, that's just what they do because they can.
Well, I mean, and they're the Warriors. Looking at last year's stats, here are the games played for their best players. Klay Thompson, 73. Kevin Durant, 68. Draymond Green, 70. Stephen Curry, 51. Andre Iguodala, 64. These guys are not going to play more than that.
No, Steph probably plays more.
I mean, yeah, but 51. Unless he's actually hurt, they're going to play more than that. But still, it's not a situation where you're not going to see 82s on Golden State. Like, these guys are going to take some
nights
off.
I don't think you're going to see mid-70s. Like, Klay begrudgingly. Like, Klay wants to be out there every night.
I think Klay would have played less last year if they had had Steph and KD.
If Steph had been rough.
Yeah.
So, I think you see, I mean, they're going to balance their rest stuff. I think everybody's in the high 60s, basically, if everything goes right, and lower if people get hurt. And, yeah, I mean, I think I would
better
lean
than last year, honestly. I mean, they add they add Jacob Evans in the draft, who I think can play right away as a fringe guy. They add
more Jordan Bell.
Yeah.
More Jordan Bell.
They add Jonas Jerebko, and, of course, they add Boogie for later on.
Yep.
I think I would, you know, I would not touch this for any reason. I think if you made me pick it, I would take the over, which is a weird thing to say, because I normally default to the under. I was expecting probably to see a little bit higher from them this year, but I think people are kind of wise now to the fact that they don't need to try. Yeah, I don't love anything, but I definitely would not bet this. No way. No chance.
Yeah, I think I lean slightly under. I think 61, 62 wins, but
sounds
not touching
right.
it. Not touching it.
Let's move on. The Lakers are really interesting. Obviously, the LeBron factor is there. 48.5 RPM hates the Lakers. 41 wins, even with LeBron, because of the fact that their roster makes no sense at all.
Mm-hmm.
So this comes down to what LeBron do we see? Is LeBron going to play 82 again? If LeBron does not want to play 82 again, which we don't know just yet, but the only way that I would even consider the over, and I wouldn't, is if we just knew LeBron was going to play all 82. Otherwise, this is an under for me.
Yep, that's great. This roster sucks.
I mean, it really does. I mean, I do think there's a little bit of. I think you and I've talked about this before offline, but I absolutely hated all the veteran moves. The only one that I think is even defensible is Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. The Lance move is just horrific. I can't even why. I don't know why that would even exist. Their centers are JaVale McGee, Avika Subac, and Mo Wagner. But the only argument I have in favor of the roster is that I think the young guys, and in particular Lonzo Ball, is being underrated now, weirdly. But, I mean, I say that with full knowledge that I wrote about someone calling Brandon Ingram the next Scottie Pippen or something earlier this week or last week, whatever that was. So
that's upsetting.
Maybe not. anyway, I think 48.5, they could certainly go over if LeBron just busts it all year and things go well. But I really don't like this roster very much, so I would have to go under, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't give it out because here's the thing. There's always the chance LeBron wants to prove people
that's
wrong.
Why I wouldn't bet against LeBron. I refuse to.
And here's the thing. It might take 48-ish wins to secure your spot in the West.
Yeah, and by the way, you should absolutely line shop this because BetOnline has 50.5, and that is an actual play for me. I would play the under there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Westgate was wise. And the funny thing is Westgate's number is still baking in Lakers fans.
Yeah,
so I think
they
the
know
the actual
that
number, if you ask them to do actual projections, I would guess it's probably in the 46 range.
Yeah, and then, I mean, there's a reason that one of the sharper systems in the recent years is just blindly take the Lakers under every year,
mm-hmm.
and it's because, you know, people drive from L.A. to Vegas to bet on the Lakers, mm-hmm. as everyone who's ever been to Summer League can attest. So, yeah, it's an under for me, almost certainly. I would never play the over here. And
yeah, shop it, though. Don't do it at Westgate. Westgate's going to probably have your worst number.
Be smart. 50.5 is available. You remember when LeBron signed, and I think it was
MyBookie
put like 62.5 or some outrageous
which
number?
MyBookie is an absolute joke.
Yeah,
but,
it's bad. But
if you got it there, congrats.
Congratulations on your winning ticket, because there's no chance in the world they won 63 games. Zero.
Nope.
So there you go. All right, let's go to the Clippers. This is perhaps my favorite play, Robbie. You ready for this? Awesome. Clippers 35.5. Where are you at with the Clippers?
I don't know.
Under Robbie.
I don't like this basketball team.
I think they're gonna be awful. And I might be wrong about this. The Clippers were better than I thought they'd be last year. They won 42 games. I would have certainly taken the under on 42 games last year. I think I probably did. I can't remember necessarily what we talked about on this podcast, but I think I probably took the under. They're gonna be bad. Part of that is the fact that they may want to be eventually. Only really have you look at this roster. They have a bunch of professional basketball players on it, but at the same time, you have Pat Beverly with an injury and non-guaranteed. You have Milos is non-guaranteed. You have Lou Williams coming off of his career year. I can't imagine. I know I love Lou. I know you do as well.
Lou Will
is not going to be as good as he was last year. I just can't.
No, absolutely not. He just got 3 years.
You have Danilo Gallinari, who is a walking injury risk at all times. Tobias Harris is great. I like Tobias Harris a lot. He can really play. But center is a big downgrade. You go from DeAndre Jordan to Marcin Gortat.
Boban.
Yeah, Boban. I mean, this is a bizarre roster in a lot of ways.
I like Luke though. Luke is a nice addition.
I mean, here's a situation
Hawks
where...
Hawks legend Mike Scott.
If you're the Clippers...
Who is Costco Tobias Harris.
There's probably a way to just play your best guys and win more than 35 games. That's correct. They just drafted two guards in the lottery. Are they really not going to play those guys?
One of which is not good at basketball.
Oh, no. Jerome Robinson is... That was the worst pick of the draft. Full stop. I might be wrong about that, but that's...
I like Shai Gilgeous a lot.
Me too. No, so I just can't see a scenario where the Clippers don't play their lottery guards, lottery picks. Those guys have to play, right? Like, I can't imagine they don't play.
They trade up for one.
Yeah, I don't know. This is an under for me. I understand the roster probably looks better than the 35.5 wins would indicate, but RPM also says 35. It'd be smart for the Clippers to lean into their youth and lean into the future, and if they do that, it's going to be the under.
Yeah, the counter there is Doc.
Doc may not want to do that, which is fine.
Might be kind of Bud-ish.
My saving grace there would be I'm not sure they're better than this even if they play the start. Even if they play, they were veterans.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's a weird team. I don't feel strongly about it. I think I would lean slightly under, but again, like, this team somehow won 42 games last year.
I will say the number was lower than I was hoping it was going to be. Yeah. I was envisioning like a 40, and I would have been like calling you and Flagstaff to get on a plane or something. But no, it's 35.5 is actually a pretty good number. But
I think it's pretty good. I would not bet it, but I can understand wanting to buy in. I hope they play some Darius Thornwell more.
I like him. Always have.
Me too.
Okay, let's go to the Phoenix Suns, your hometown team.
Lifelong Suns fan here.
Your hometown team, the Phoenix Suns, 28.5 wins. RPM says 27 wins. This is a weird one because Phoenix is, by all accounts, trying to win for some reason this year, but they were the worst team in the league last year. 21 wins.
Hammer the under.
Yeah, having to be 8 wins better is usually a dicey recipe unless you're led by LeBron. And Phoenix is not led by LeBron.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Who'd they add to make themselves significant? Trevor Ariza, nice signing.
DeAndre Ayton.
DeAndre Ayton is an improvement, but a rookie and not very good at defense. This is going to be a really bad defensive team, is the thing. Yeah, Josh Jackson is reasonably good as long as somebody's not physically bigger than him. And he's working on that, but he's not there yet.
The only guy on this entire team that they added that you know is going to be good is Trevor Ariza. Every other addition is a rookie or Rashawn Holmes.
Yeah, and I'm not in Rashawn Holmes' hive.
So
like,
and then
some in Philadelphia.
More importantly for me, as we talked about on the Eastern podcast, with Orlando, this is a team without a point guard. They have Brandon Knight, who didn't play last year and has been banged up for a long time. And they have Elie Okobo, who I like, but is a rookie.
Also, someone in the West has to lose a lot of games.
Yeah, I mean,
that's the other thing. Like, someone in the West has to be a 24-win team. Like, just the math, when you look at all of these win totals, the math tells you someone sucks in the West, if they're better than their record. And it feels like the very young Phoenix Suns that aren't very good at defense are probably the prime candidate for this, especially a bad point guard defense team.
Yeah, the Suns and the
Kings. No one to defend point guards.
The Kings are the next team, and we'll talk about them in a second. But, you know, Phoenix has a bunch of intriguing players. You know, they have Devin Booker, who's legitimately good.
I think they're going to be fun. I think they're going to be significantly improved and maybe only win four more games.
Right.
Because the West is disgusting. Someone has to lose basketball games, and there's going to be a lot of learning moments. They had some games last year, but they weren't within 35 points.
No, like, I mean,
I think they're going to be a competitive, like, a lot of games where they're like, ooh, hanging around the late third, and then lose. Because they just don't have anybody that can step up and stop a point guard or step up and run a set.
Yeah, I think...
Because Devin Booker doesn't run sets. Devin Booker's going to score.
The addition of Trevor Ariza makes sense on paper. I know they have a lot of wings, but I'm not sure he's the kind of guy that helps a losing team all that much.
Yeah. No, like, he doesn't.
I like Trevor Ariza as a role player on a good team.
Who's passing to him to set him up?
He needs to be set up offensively, and defensively, he's a pretty solid wing defender, but he's not the stopper either. So, and they have TJ Warren still. They have Josh Jackson still. They just drafted Mikal Bridges, who I'm assuming they're going to try to play. They don't really have a natural power forward on this entire roster. Like, that's any good, I should say. They have Marquise Chris and Dragon Bender, who are both bad.
By the way, Marquise Chris played a lot of basketball last year.
Yeah, I mean, they have...
He played like 40 minutes a game.
I mean, I'm sure they're going to play some of these small forwards at power forward, and that's probably what I would do as well. But then you have DeAndre Ayton, who wasn't a good defender as a college player. You have Tyson Chandler. I mean, they're bad. I mean, this is definitely an underplay. I'm not sure how feverishly you want to, you know, argue for it, but I can't imagine laying my hard-earned money on the over. I'll tell you that.
No, I'm pretty strongly on the under.
I'm with you, 100%. 28.5 is higher than I thought it was going to be. As I glance at the offshore number, it's 27.5 offshore. So if you want to get on the action, it's probably best to do at Westgate if you can manage your way to get out there. But there you go.
Hope, sweet home.
tip of your excitement, Robbie, please. The final team in the Pacific Division is the Sacramento Kings, who are the other contender to be terrible in the Western Conference. In fact, they're projected to be the worst team in the West by Westgate, and they have the second worst over-under by Westgate, only ahead of the Hawks at 25.5. RPM feels the same way, so the Kings are still the Kings. They're the last team with cap space, by the way, so if they somehow wanted to go, you know, sign Rodney Hood or something, they probably could do that. But for now, we assume this is going to be the team.
They'll be extremely Kings.
Yeah, they added Marvin Bagley, they added Yogi Ferrell, and they added Nemanja Bjelica. Those are their big additions. In addition to, of course, they have, you know, De'Aaron Fox coming back for year two. Yeah. There's a lot going on here. This is a roster that has 18 guys right now. So
yeah, Bogdan's here.
Bogdan can play. Buddy Hield can play a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Harry Giles. Full 180 on Harry Giles. I'm here for the experience this year.
What's the plan in Sacramento?
There's not one.
I mean, they're bad. I think they're the worst team in the West. 25.5 does seem sort of okay. For me, I don't love either side, and it's about what they are. It will come down to what they decide to do. If they want to play their veterans and win.
Well, the funny thing is they have no incentive to tank, so it's just a matter of whether they want to develop.
That's the question. If they had their own pick, I would take the under, almost certainly. But because they don't, that means they have some incentives to be playing Bogdanovich and Buddy Hield and Zach Randolph and Willie Cauley-Stein and Bjelica and these guys who might be okay. Whereas if they played their young guys and, you know, really featured Harry Giles and really featured Scal, and, you know, they might be a little bit worse. So I don't know, man. I mean, this is a team that I can't imagine being invested in. So shout out to, like, Greg Wissinger and the people that have to watch the team 82 times. Lord of Mercy. I would default to the under out of spite, but I have no strong feelings.
Yeah. I mean, again, somebody's got to lose a lot of games in the West. I think it's the Suns and the Kings. But again, I think this number's a little more correct.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, like they're like the Suns with less of a direction. Like they're just wandering aimlessly. I mean, but they do have some young talent. Like
this front court rotation is.
Oh, it's a disaster.
It's comical. It's a disaster.
And like I'm Scal Hive.
Well, they have eight guys that are at a bare minimum power forward only or pure bigs.
I'm ready for Marvin Bagley at the 3 25% of the time.
I mean, Marvin Bagley, Harry Giles, Scal Labissiere, Deontay Davis, Bielitz, who they just paid real money to, Kostas Kufis, who they owe money to, Willie Cauley-Stein was a top 10 pick, yes, and Zach was. Randolph.
I still believe in Willie and Scal.
Oh, I want them to trade Willie Cauley-Stein desperately. He needs to get out of there. I still believe.
Yes. Free Willie.
Get him out of there.
I'm going to make that Photoshop.
You should, right now, as we talk on the podcast. But
free
no,
Willie.
Kings under. Let's just go there for me. I'm not giving that out, but it's a...
Lean under, don't watch this basketball team.
Strong agree on both counts.
It's going to just hurt your head.
All right, let's go to the final division, the Southwest. The Houston Rockets and a weird one, 54.5. The Rockets, for those of you who might have forgotten, won 65 games last year. That's a lot of wins. And by the way, it was backed up by their peripherals. They were supposed to win 60, I think like two, so it wasn't quite 65, but still a very, very good basketball team last year. They, of course, lost Trevor Ariza.
They did.
They lost Luke. They replaced those guys with James Ennis and the immortal Carmelo Anthony.
Hawks legend.
I like James Ennis a lot. But and my son DeAnthony Melton, who should be on the Hawks right now. Alas. That's a big drop, man. 11 wins, that's kind of where we have to start there. Like, do you see this team being that much worse?
No. I mean, I think that the fear is Chris Paul misses more time than he did last year. And James Harden has, like, I think the only way you take the under is if you think injuries catch up, but the Rockets' stated objective is to get the one seed again because they believe that's why they were in it in the Western Conference Finals.
They won 65 with James Harden playing 72 games and Chris Paul playing 58 games.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to be really worried about that hamstring for Chris Paul, which is a concern at his age.
It is.
That it's been a reoccurring nightmare for him.
I think
they will be smart with him on back-to-backs and stuff like that, given what happened in the postseason. However, yeah, I mean, losing Ariza's big, losing Mbah Mute might be bigger from a defensive standpoint where they were really good last year. But this is a 58-win team.
Yeah, I lean over as well. I think the reactions have gone a little bit overboard. I do think that, like, a lot went right last year, but in the same breath, I do think that this is a team that's built for the regular season in a lot of ways. Like, they're going to come out, they're going to do what they do, they're going to run the same stuff they always run, and it's going to work. James Harden ISOs work. It's just what happens. So I'm not sure he's going to be as good as he was this year because he was awesome. He was the MVP of the league, but he played 72 games. I have to lean over. I wouldn't necessarily give it out because giving out an over on 54.5 wins like hurts my soul a little bit deep down, but it's the right side. I can't imagine giving the under out, especially when I love DeAnthony Melton. I think he can actually help them as a rookie, which is a weird thing to say out loud. So, oh, and by the way, there's also the looming situation where they have a piece to play. They have a move to make in like trading for a wing. It might be Kent Bazemore. It might be somebody else. But if they come out and struggle early, they're going to do something. They're not just going to sit around. No chance.
No, I like the over again. I'm with you. I wouldn't lock it up, but I do think that's a play.
Yep, for sure. All right, let's go to the Pelicans. The Pelicans are at 45.5. They won 48 a year ago. Kind of weird in some ways that this number is down from last year. But this is, again, a kind of another weird team. They do have Julius Randle now full-time and Nikola Mirotic, who are both good basketball players. But they do lose Boogie, of course, for the full season. They add Alfred Payton in the Rajon Rondo role. And that's kind of it. They added, I'm going to say they signed Ian Clark, but it's sort of the same team as they had at the end of the year, except for the fact that they have Julius Randle on it now. So I like the Pelicans quite a bit, but you're basically betting on Anthony Davis.
That's correct.
If he plays 75 games, this is an over.
Oh, it crushes the over.
Yeah.
Him and Drew play.
Sure.
Is that over?
Yeah, Drew.
Those are your two.
He was awesome last year.
He was so good. And that excites me. I like Julius Randle there. I know people have some questions about the fit. I think it works better than
I love it.
I think it works better than some detractors have said. I think it's not quite the offensive explosion to the level of like Boogie was taking like a bunch of threes and was really good at it. And like I think this is projecting maybe more of. You know, I mean, they were really good for a stretch with Boogie and AD playing together. And then they were really good when AD just kind of, like, put the team on his back down the stretch. And I think you have to wonder, like, will he be able to, you know, like, sustain that? But he might. I would lean over here. Again, the health situation, because those guys do have such a history of being banged up. Like, AD just randomly will miss, like, two or three games here, two or three games there because something happens. It's the way he plays and how often he has to play that just – he rolls an ankle here. He gets, you know, hit in the knee here. He, you know, things just happen to him. I also think it's because guys have to play so much harder against him on defense that those guys just get hit more often, and that brings more injuries into play. Just a little knocks. Like, I, you know, we're always afraid of the big one with AD, but I think if you're talking about the over here, you're more afraid of, okay, what if he only plays 68 games because he misses three here, three here, three here, three here? You know? It's not, okay, he's going to miss 20-game stretch. I think you worry about, like, he just has those little ankles and knees, wrists, things like that just happen to him. But yeah, if he played, I mean, he was phenomenal. Drew was phenomenal. Love the Randle fit. Mirotić worked well. I'm interested to see how they kind of play those three together, because you have to play those three together at times. And defensively, that could be a nightmare on the wing with Mirotić and Randle. But yeah, I think I'd lean over. I feel this team's about the same as they were last year. Again, you lose Boogie for that half of a season. That's important, but you add Randle hopefully for a full season, and I think you kind of end up with a wash if everything is what it is. So lean over, not locking.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you across the board there. I don't think that it's a safe over because of the fact that, you know, Anthony Davis has the injury history. With Boogie last year, they were 27-21. So they were, 21-23 without him?
Yeah.
So that makes, you know, that wasn't, that's not awful. And of course, they didn't have Mirotić that entire time. It was, and of course, now they have Randle. So that is a huge thing for me. It definitely hurts. You know, Boogie's peak is clearly higher than those guys are. But yeah, I do think you need health from Davis and Drew. If those guys are healthy, if they play the same amount of games they did last year, which is a combined 156, this is going to go over pretty easily, I think. But if not, then you have some diciness. So that's why I'd probably stay away. But that's a solid number, and I think it's baked in. You know, 45.5 is baked in with injuries, because there's no real reason to think they're going to be 3-4 games worse.
Right.
Okay, this is perhaps the most challenging one on the entire board, and that's San Antonio Spurs. 43.5 RPM hates them, 38.5. The argument that we have all heard at this point in time is that they won 47 last year with basically nothing from Kawhi, so why wouldn't they be at least that good with DeMar DeRozan? It's never that easy, but do you subscribe to that theory?
I mean, I think this number's close to right. I would lean over just off track record and
Spurs in capital letters.
Yeah, Spurs and Pop in capital letters. And also, like, people underrate DeMar DeRozan as a regular season basketball player.
That is probably true.
He's like, especially statistical models that hate his game. Yeah, I mean, look, this is – I understand why RPM doesn't like them. Like, I think DeMar DeRozan and LaMarcus Aldridge is like the analytics community's nightmare pairing.
Well, I also can't imagine I can't imagine RPM looked at last year's Spurs. If they had taken Kawhi off last year's Spurs, they would not have projected 47 wins.
No, 100%. So, yeah, I mean, the Spurs are an overachieving team. I think Pop can tap into DeMar to at least get the same DeMar that we've seen, if not a little bit more. I think there will be a little bit of DeMar wanting to show Toronto something. Like, you know, like he clearly is upset with Masai. I just this feels a little low, but again, I think it's probable to take a little step back. I mean, you lose Kyle Anderson was a solid player for them last year. Like, there's a reason they didn't match that deal, but he's a solid basketball player.
They would definitely overpay for Kyle Anderson, but
yeah, but that's how restricted free agency works. Yeah. Like, if you are going to sign somebody, you have to overpay.
I think the loss of Danny Green matters more than people think it does.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, that's the question, is who's shooting threes for this team? Who's stretching the floor? Because, as mentioned, DeMar and LaMarcus operate in a certain area for the majority of their points.
They basically have two shooters, at least on the perimeter. It's Patty Mills and it's Marco Bellinelli.
Yeah, and as Hawks fans know, you don't want to play Marco Bellinelli a ton.
And they have Davis Bertans, they have Pau Gasol, can kind of shoot a little bit, but in terms of just action, I mean, I guess they have Bryn Forbes as well, but Bryn Forbes, you have to play him then, you know what I mean? Like, you're deciding to play him over, you know, over Lonnie Walker and over DeJounte Murray and over Derek White. Like,
yeah,
it's a weird – that backcourt is very strange.
It's a very weird group, and there are legit shooting questions, but they're going to be the Spurs. They're going to be competitive. I think 44, 45 wins is probably correct. So I would lean ever so slightly over, but if things go wrong, things could go wrong. You know, like, we're in that zone with the Spurs where for the first time in a long time, I think you could see them really kind of fall off. But I don't see that happening. I think it's a slightly worse team than last year, but not five games.
Yeah, if DeMar and LaMarcus do what they did last year, they're going to make the playoffs, and that means they're going to be over.
Yep.
If not, then things get weird, but I will default to over as well, even if not with my hard-earned money. All right, two more here. Memphis Grizzlies, 34.5.
Mm-hmm.
This is a weird one.
Yes.
As a lot of these are, but Memphis especially, because it's basically you're betting on Mike Conley's health. This is all this is. If Mike Conley plays 70 games, they go over. If he doesn't, they don't.
Yeah, I mean, something I talked with Matt about was Memphis is one of those teams that's always kind of their numbers usually pretty good to go to get the over on, but again, this is a soft number. They're clearly trying to win. This is a soft number if you buy into the health, but that's more so than maybe any other team. A bigger if for this exercise, and so that's why I think this is a stay away. But if you are a Grizzlies optimist, I mean, before last year, it had been like a decade since they won fewer than 40 games.
Right.
So,
and it was, I mean, it was horrible. They won 22 games, but they also packed it in pretty early.
They punted pretty early, and
they're better. It's not just Conley too. They got Kyle Anderson, who you know we talked about not loving in San Antonio, but he helps them. They got Garrett Temple for basically nothing, and he helps them too.
Yes.
And then they have
Jaren Jackson Jr. as I mentioned earlier, I think him, Luka Doncic, and Wendell Carter Jr. are your biggest impact rookies from the top of this class.
If you look at this roster and assume reasonable health, it's an over.
Yep.
I'm pretty confident in that. It's just the health is always the concern because both Gasol and Conley have injury issues.
Yes, they do. And they're older.
Doesn't seem to be. I mean, I kind of hate it being that simple, but it kind of just is. So, I would advocate an overplay on Memphis, but you have to know there's definite risk in doing that. All right, last one, and one the Hawks definitely have a lot of interest in is the Dallas Mavericks, an identical number to Memphis. They have 34.5 wins projected by Westgate, and of course the Hawks have a top five projected pick here come come June, so they're rooting for the Mavs to be pretty bad, but not so bad. That seems reasonable to me, but also, why do they have the same over-under as the Memphis Grizzlies? I'm confused.
I'm not sure. This seems high to me.
Yes.
I would say under.
They won 24 last year, by the way, and really only add Luca. I mean, I guess
Luca and DeAndre Jordan. Yeah,
DeAndre Jordan is important, but sneakily, DeAndre Jordan is not what he was 3 years ago.
And also probably not a guy that makes you many wins better.
They also
because...
don't only have – it's a weird – I mean, they have Dirk. Who's Dirk is Dirk. Mm-hmm. But Dwight Powell now has been marginalized. They're going to need Dennis Smith Jr. to be pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is how good is DSJ? What are you getting off of that wing duo of Barnes and Matthews? How good is Luka as a rookie? I mean – this seems pretty optimistic about rookie Luke. I think he's going to be good. I think he's going to, like I said, like I think he's one of the three positive impact on your win total guys as a rookie at the very top here, but not in necessarily a significant way. I think it's more of like he won't be a negative like a lot of rookies are in you winning basketball games. Yeah, I don't see where the wins come from here, because like it wasn't like they were like crazy banged up last year or like they just like they were weirdly bad like the entire season we kept waiting for them to kind of like wake up.
Well, I mean, they had a 33 win expected record, so they were really unlucky.
Yeah,
if you're trying to argue in favor of Dallas, I would point to that to be sure. They were better than 24 wins last year, almost certainly.
Yes.
I don't know. I think they're going to be better than this.
A DeAndre Jordan believer.
Yeah, I think they're going to be.
I do think he helps Dennis, though, because he finally has like a pick-and-roll partner, and I think that'll help Dennis's game because he's better attacking the rim than doing anything else.
They don't have a lot of depth is my concern with Dallas. Mm-hmm. They have, you know, a pretty solid seven or eight guys with Dennis Smith, Luka Doncic, like Barea, Devin Harris,
Wesley Matthews, Harrison
Barnes, Dirk, and DeAndre, maybe Dwight Powell, but after that, it kind of gets ugly. Like Dorian Finney-Smith is involved. Rookie Jalen Brunson. Kostas on two-way. Like, it's not necessarily great there. So, yeah, I think they're going to be better than last year, to be sure. I think I'd probably project them somewhere in, like, the 32 to 34 win range,
mm-hmm.
Which is under. And I just can't see the scenario where they win, like, 40. I don't want to see that.
No, I don't get the whole like they might contend for the playoffs thing. I've heard that too. I don't know. Like you said, they were better than their record was last year, but like I don't think they added so much that I'm like, oh yeah, that plus this equals 36 wins.
They would really need.
And again, the West is so tough. Like mediocre in the West is probably going to be like 33 wins. Like if you're not good, you're gonna be bad. Like there's not like a middle class in the West that gets to win 38 games.
No, I mean they you know, Yogi Ferrell was fourth on the team in minutes last year and was pretty good, no longer on the roster. They're gonna need a real bump from Dennis Smith to be sure, and then they need Luka to be good. The only way they're gonna be winning 38 games or so is if both those things happen. Mm-hmm. And that seems like a pretty unlikely scenario for a guy who was legitimately bad last year, Dennis Smith. Like, mm-hmm. He's really talented, but he was bad. And then mm-hmm. Luke is a rookie. I mean, I love him, but he's still going to be a rookie. So,
you see it?
Yeah, I'll take the under on Dallas, even though I'm not, like, hugely running to the table to do that.
Yep.
All right, we've done it. We've navigated 30 teams without dying.
Yes, we did.
Your best bets can be found in written form, also, on DimeMag. But please promote yourself before we get out of here.
Yeah. Read Dime, read Up Rocks,
read
at R. Callen. We have new bosses. Read our stuff.
We do.
Dime Podcast. Subscribe, review, do all that good stuff.
It was Matt this week. It was a really good episode. I like that one a lot.
Matt this week, Zach Harper 2 weeks ago. I have no idea who we're going to have on this week. I think we have Dave Schilling set up for next week.
Oh, yes.
Talk some Lakers biz as well as the Meg. So that'll be appointment listening, I'm sure.
I have appeared a couple of times briefly. on the pod?
Brad is our draft expert, because he's very good at that stuff. So he's on here and there. I'm sure we'll have you on some more now that gambling's more of a thing. That's something we do.
It is legal-ish.
It is legal-ish in certain places. Biloxi.
Shots to Biloxi.
The Beau Rivage.
All right, man. Well, thank you for doing this. Yeah. It's a lot of podcast content over a two-day period, which is actually one night for us. So thank you, sir.
It's a pleasure.
I really appreciate it.
It's a pleasure.
As for everybody else, please subscribe to the podcast. Follow Robbie on Twitter and Dime and everywhere else. We'll see you guys later on in the week.